Hello, hello. This is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm delighted to be here with Azadeh Abrishami, who's visiting UT Dallas, visiting a colleague of ours, Bob Fee, that you originally knew. Tell us how you know Bob.
So Bob is my former professor back in Savannah College of Art and Design. And he told me so much about, you know, a collaborative sessions. The people get together and they talk about technology, innovation, different science, and that would be a source of inspirations for any designer.
Okay, when you were at the SCAD, the Savannah College of Art and Design, you actually studied both industrial and engineering and industrial design, is that right? What did you study?
I've graduated from Tehran University with a bachelor degree in industrial design, and then I went to Tehran Polytechnic University back in Tehran, and I've graduated with a master degree in industrial engineering, and then I came to United States to study more innovation strategy, system thinking, and that sort of stuff, and that's how I joined Savannah College of Art and Design, and I studied design management and I graduated, got my second master degree in design management.
But you also, so in industrial design, you had a particular interest in manufacturing, is that right?
Yes, and that's how I joined Tehran Polytechnic University, uh-huh. Because, you know, designing a tangible object is something, it's a very artistic thing to design a tangible stuff, but at the same time, it's really important to know what kind of material you use, what kind of manufacturing system that you pick for designing that sort of stuff. So I wanted to know more about that side, more about that technological side of design. That's how I joined industrial engineering, and I got my master's degree in that.
Very
field.
Good. And if I understand correctly, you have a small startup company. So you willing to just tell us a little bit about what domain you're in with your startup? I know you're just getting going.
Yeah, so we recently started with a couple of talented people from Helsinki University in Finland, and a couple of my my American friends, and some of my friends back in MIT. We actually got together. We're trying to help companies to come up with more innovative frameworks to solve their problems. The most recent one is actually a practical or practical and inspirational framework that help company that helps companies identify new target audience for their products or services. So that's what we do.
So actually, in the little session we were in before, Don Hicks, who's a professor of management here and
yes.
very involved in this Ignite program,
yes.
Of imagining projects that you could do if you had infinite connectivity on your cell phone. But he talked about adjacent possibles.
Uh-huh.
And
yes.
so just listening to you talking about how you help companies come up with new frameworks.
Yes.
So, right, you're not designing solutions. You're really looking at the next level of how you design a company's framework.
Yes, correct. So we actually help them cultivate what they have, try to facilitate their resources, and actually help them discover what they already have and enhance innovation through their resources.
Uh-huh.
So we don't really add anything to them. This is the company working in that framework in coming out with an innovative solution. So we're just giving them like inspirations and that sort of stuff.
That's right, and that, I think that was one of Don Hicks's points, which was sometimes innovation is actually not inventing anything new, and he was talking about university and local companies, but actually things that already exist, but
exactly.
the connection's not yet been made.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
And obviously the session we just did here in the ATEC watering hole, it is part of that kind of methodology of, I mean, you know, at this given time on this campus, there are probably 20,000 really interesting people.
Beautiful.
But how do you,
yeah.
how do you make those connections without knowing that so and so has such an interest?
Yes.
One of the other things we started chatting about, as I mentioned to you, my grandparents emigrated from Central Europe,
yeah.
actually Czech background to Texas, and then I was actually born in France, and so I just moved to Dallas 3 years ago, and so I'm quite sensitive and aware right now of how, in my case, how science feels like in France and how it feels like in Dallas, and how, whether you like it or not, in fact, I think it's a positive thing, you know, your cultural framework mm-hmm. actually affects the design solutions that you can conceive of. And you told me about a little anecdote of a project Nokia was trying to do. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So when I was a design student, Nokia came to our university, and they were looking for a solution or an opportunity to localize mobile phone for Iranian market. Throughout our research, we actually discovered that, you know, and actually based on the situation at the moment. So there were a lot of movements, social movements going on in Iran at the moment. So our research actually showed that, for example, if you know, a person attending one of those movements was caught with a police or government, and they accessed their mobile phone, it was very dangerous for, you know, the contacts, you know, for his or her contacts or any other information. If they could have find any other information, it was really, really, you know, dangerous to the situation of that person. That was one. And then right at the same time, the other research showed us that, you know, culturally, Iranian people, they have different layers. So they don't necessarily reveals all that level or layers of information all of a sudden. So if you go to an Iranian house, you don't necessarily know everything about them. You don't necessarily see all the pictures. This is not, you know, the culture. The more you get familiar with them, the more they get to know you, you get a chance to get closer to their family. You get to know, get the opportunity to see their pictures, their family pictures, and that sort of stuff. So getting all these information together, we actually came out with an idea that, you know, a local phone for an Iranian people at that time could be layered. So you can actually carry each layer one time, or, you know, you don't necessarily need to take all that layers of information with you at the time. So the only thing that, you know, the people needed in a protest or when they were attending a social movement was something that they can actually connect or make a very short phone calls to say where they are or if they wanted to, like, find locations.
Okay, so I'm just going to leapfrog on that because I've just made an interesting connection. So. As I mentioned to you, I've worked in both French scientific research labs and American research labs, and, you know, you have to be careful with generalizations.
Yes.
But in general, the French people I knew had a very different sense of privacy with respect to their family life.
Yes.
Than my American colleagues.
Yes.
And so, with my American colleagues, you routinely get invited to people's home or for a barbecue in the afternoon, or in a French family, you don't invite a colleague from work to just drop by on a Sunday afternoon. You know, of course, as Americans in France, we used to do that. So this different sense of privacy and family layers is clearly a very grounded thing in different cultures. And I'm just going to make a creative connection here. So I wrote an article sometime around 1996 about electronic monasteries.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted, and it was just like your idea of layers, that some emails I wanted to get to the person right away, and I wanted to get the reply right away.
Nice.
But some people, I didn't care if it took a week to get to them and I got the a reply a week later, right? You know. And of course, we all do that now because now on the cell phone, you can put stars on the people that will, you know, the phone will only ring for people you know.
Yes.
Well, and so on. But the idea of the electronic monasteries is that you could modulate how close people, you know, had access to you, and how people who weren't close to you, well, the letter would take a week, you know.
Yeah.
I think we've lost that sense of, we were discussing about how you do intellectual dating online, right? And the problem is that our online systems don't have the sophistication of what our interpersonal systems are. I don't know if you can connect to that.
Yeah, well, that, and at the same time, it's not probably that engaging to all culture. Maybe it is because we're not actually looking at people, looking at everyone with the same perspective or with the same glass, and wanting everyone to react to the same website or platform or, you know, a mobile application. It's not a good way of looking. It can't really lead anywhere. And I guess the best thing is to actually divide people or make different clusters of people that they can actually resonate with that website or that sort of stuff. Because, like, we have different cultures. Every culture has its own, details and, specifically.
Yeah, and the problem is, one of the things that's going on in the area that you're working in and other people is what's called deep personalization.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously the companies now collect information on you, but in that process, and the term that's floating around is disindividuation.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, Amazon only cares about the things you can buy on Amazon.
Exactly.
Although they do sell your information to other companies. Exxon only cares about your gasoline habits, but you're a whole person, right?
Yes.
And obviously in daily life, those things get modulated in our interactions and so on. But online, everything is kind of flattened.
Yes, that's true. That's
And so that's an interesting design problem of how we design online systems to reflect the sophistication we have in interpersonal relationships.
This is actually a very interesting topic to actually look deeper into it.
Uh-huh.
And it actually probably, it calls for different disciplines to come together and see, like, how we can actually solve this flatness or make it a little bit more interactive for different, you know, clusters of people with different backgrounds and different interests and motivations. And to be able to, you know, at least to be able to serve different people.
So indeed, we're getting into design areas, which obviously require both information design, experience design, but also social design, right?
Yeah.
And then we get into very sensitive areas because issues of ethics and value and culture become really important in ways that global international companies probably don't know very well how to deal with. So maybe your startup.
Well, yes, because one of our recent toolkit or frameworks that's going to help companies or different industries to actually lay out their market. And when I say market or their customers, it actually helped them divide them in, or see them a little bit wider in a wider perspectives. Because it used a very unique technique to kind of categorize people or divide them into different clusters.
Okay, we'll warn all our listeners to sign their NDA immediately.
Well, yeah, so...
feel free not to reveal anything.
Yeah,
secret.
I'm not revealing it, but
well,
it actually used...
We have a lot of people listening, so...
Yes. So if they're actually interested, I can actually send them along... some more information.
Okay, so if you'd like more information on As It Is Startup Company, please send her an email, which is on the website. I think we're going to wrap it up there. And just to conclude this discussion, please listen again to this podcast from the beginning. After I tell you what the word as a day means in English, what does it mean?
It means freedom.
Thank you so much. It's been a delight talking to you.
Likewise. Thank you very much for having me. Thanks. I need it.